But why, Dr. Selden? If you arrange the exile, why? Could not events be far better controlled here on Trantor?
Why, there are some reasons. Working on Terminus, we will have Imperial support without ever rousing fears that we would endanger Imperial safety. Gale said,
But you aroused those fears only to force exile. I still do not understand.
20,000 families would not travel to the end of the galaxy of their own will, perhaps.
But why should they be forced there?
Gale paused.
May I not know?
Selden said, Not yet. It is enough for the moment that you know that a scientific refuge will be established on Terminus, and another will be established at the other end of the galaxy, let us say. And he smiled. At Star's End. And as for the rest, I will die soon, and you will see more than I. No, no, spare me your shock and good wishes. My doctors tell me that I cannot live longer than a year or two. But then, I have accomplished in life what I have intended, and under what circumstances may one better die?
And after you die, sir?
Why, there will be successors, perhaps even yourself. And these successors will be able to apply the final touch in the scheme and instigate the revolt on Anacreon at the right time and in the right manner. Thereafter, events may roll unheeded.
I do not understand.
You will. Selden's lined face grew peaceful and tired, both at once. Most will leave for Terminus, but some will stay. It will be easy to arrange. But as for me, and he concluded in a whisper so that Gale could scarcely hear him, I am finished. Part 2. The Encyclopedists. 1. Terminus. Its location, see map, was an odd one for the role it was called upon to play in galactic history, and yet, as many writers have never tired of pointing out, an inevitable one. Located on the very fringe of the galactic spiral, an only planet of an isolated sun, poor in resources and negligible in economic value, it was never settled in the 5 centuries after its discovery until the landing of the Encyclopedists. It was inevitable that as a new generation grew, Terminus would become something more than an appendage of the psychohistorians of Trantor. With the Anacreonian revolt and the rise to power of Salvor Hardin, first of the great line of Encyclopedia Galactica. Louis Pyren was busily engaged at his desk in the one well-lit corner of the room. Work had to be coordinated. Effort had to be organized. Threads had to be woven into a pattern. 50 years now. 50 years to establish themselves and set up Encyclopedia Foundation No. 1 into a smoothly working unit. 50 years to gather the raw material. 50 years to prepare. It had been done. 5 more years would see the publication of the first volume of the most monumental work the galaxy had ever conceived. And then at 10-year intervals, regularly, like clockwork, volume after volume. And with them, there would be supplements, special articles on events of current interest, until... Pyren stirred uneasily as the muted buzzer upon his desk muttered peevishly. He had almost forgotten the appointment. He shoved the door release and, out of an abstracted corner of one eye, saw the door open and the broad figure of Salvor Hardin enter. Pyren did not look up. Hardin smiled to himself. He was in a hurry, but he knew better than to take offense at Pyren's cavalier treatment of anything or anyone that disturbed him at his work. He buried himself in the chair on the other side of the desk and waited. Pyren's stylus made the faintest scraping sound as it raced across paper. Otherwise, neither motion nor sound. And then, Hardin withdrew a 2-credit coin from his vest pocket. He flipped it, and its stainless steel surface caught flitters of light as it tumbled through the air. He caught it and flipped it again, watching the flashing reflections lazily. Stainless steel made good medium of exchange on a planet where all metal had to be imported. Pyren looked up and blinked.
"Stop that," he said querulously.
"Huh?"
"That infernal coin-tossing. Stop it."
"Oh." Hardin pocketed the metal disc. "Tell me when you're ready, will you? I promise to be back at the city council meeting before the new aqueduct project is put to a vote."
Pyren sighed and shoved himself away from the desk. "I'm ready, but I hope you aren't going to bother me with city affairs. Take care of that yourself, please. The Encyclopedia takes up all my time."
"Have you heard the news?" questioned Hardin phlegmatically.
"What news?"
"The news that the Terminus City Ultrawave set received 2 hours ago. The royal governor of the prefect of Anacreon has assumed the title of king."
"Well, what of it?"
"It means," responded Hardin, "that we're cut off from the inner regions of the Empire. Oh, we've been expecting it, but that doesn't make it any more comfortable. Anacreon stands square across what was our last remaining trade route to Santani and to Trantor and to Vega itself.
Where is our metal to come from? We haven't managed to get a steel or aluminum shipment through in 6 months, and now we won't be able to get any at all, except by grace of the King of Anacreon.
Pyrene titch-titched impatiently. Well, get them through him, then.
But can we? Listen, Pyrene. According to the charter which established this foundation, the Board of Trustees of the Encyclopedia Committee has been given full administrative powers. I, as mayor of Terminus City, have just enough power to blow my own nose and perhaps to sneeze if you countersign an order giving me permission. It's up to you and your board, then. I'm asking you in the name of the city, whose prosperity depends upon uninterrupted commerce with the galaxy, to call an emergency meeting.
Stop! A campaign speech is out of order. Now, Harton, the Board of Trustees has not barred the establishment of a municipal government on Terminus. We understand one to be necessary because of the increase in population since the foundation was established 50 years ago, and because of the increasing number of people involved in non-encyclopedia affairs. But that does not mean that the first and only aim of the foundation is no longer to publish the definitive encyclopedia of all human knowledge. We are a state-supported scientific institution, Harton. We cannot, must not, will not interfere in local politics.
Local politics? By the Emperor's left big toe, Perrin, this is a matter of life and death. The planet Terminus by itself cannot support a mechanized civilization. It lacks metals, you know that. It hasn't a trace of iron, copper, or aluminum in the surface rocks, and precious little of anything else. What do you think will happen to the encyclopedia if this whatchamacallem King of Anacreon clamps down on us?
On us? Are you forgetting that we are under the direct control of the Emperor himself? We are not part of the Prefect of Anacreon or of any other prefect. Memorize that. We are part of the Emperor's personal domain, and no one touches us. The Empire can protect its own.
Then why didn't it prevent the royal governor of Anacreon from kicking over the traces? And only Anacreon? At least 20 of the outermost prefects of the galaxy. The entire periphery, as a matter of fact, have begun steering things their own way. I tell you, I feel darned uncertain of the Empire and its ability to protect us.
Hokum. Royal governors, kings, what's the difference? The Empire is always shot through with a certain amount of politics, and with different men pulling this way and that. Governors have rebelled, and, for that matter, emperors have been deposed or assassinated before this. But what has that to do with the Empire itself? Forget it, Harton. It's none of our business. We are first of all and last of all scientists, and our concern is the encyclopedia. Oh, yes, I'd almost forgotten. Harden?
Well?
Do something about that paper of yours.
Pyrene's voice was angry. The Terminus City Journal? It isn't mine. It's privately owned. What's it been doing?
For weeks now, it has been recommending that the 50th anniversary of the establishment of the Foundation be made the occasion for public holidays and quite inappropriate celebrations.
And why not? The radium clock will open the first vault in 3 months. I would call this a big occasion, wouldn't you?
Not for silly pageantry, Harden. The first vault and its opening concern the Board of Trustees alone. Anything of importance will be communicated to the people. That is final, and please make it plain to the journal.
I'm sorry, Perrin, but the city charter guarantees a certain minor matter known as freedom of the press.
It may, but the Board of Trustees does not. I am the Emperor's representative on Terminus, Harden, and have full powers in this respect.
Harden's expression became that of a man counting to 10 mentally. He said grimly, in connection with your status as Emperor's representative, then, I have a final piece of news to give you.
About Anacreon?
Pyrene's lips tightened. He felt annoyed. Yes. A special envoy will be sent to us from Anacreon in 2 weeks.
An envoy? Here? From Anacreon?
Pyrene chewed that.
What for?
Harden stood up and shoved his chair back up against the desk. I give you one guess. And he left, quite unceremoniously. Two. Anselm Ut Roderick, Ut itself signifying noble blood, sub-prefect of Pluema and envoy extraordinary of His Highness of Anacreon, plus half a dozen other titles, was met by Salver Harden at the spaceport with all the imposing ritual of a state occasion. With a tight smile and a low bow, the sub-prefect had flipped his blaster from its holster and presented it to Harden butt first. Harden returned the compliment with a blaster specifically borrowed for the occasion. Friendship and goodwill were thus established, and if Harden noted the barest bulge at old Roderick's shoulder, he prudently said nothing. The ground car that received them then, preceded, flanked, and followed by the suitable cloud of minor functionaries, proceeded in a slow, ceremonious manner to Cyclopedia Square, cheered on its way by a properly enthusiastic crowd. Sub-Prefect Anselm received the cheers with the complacent indifference of a soldier and a nobleman. He said to Harden, "And this city is all your world?"
Hardin raised his voice to be heard above the clamor. We are a young world, Your Eminence. In our short history, we have had but few members of the higher nobility visiting our poor planet, hence our enthusiasm. It is certain that higher nobility did not recognize irony when he heard it. He said thoughtfully, Founded 50 years ago, You have a great deal of unexploited land here, Mayor. You have never considered dividing it into estates? Well, there's no necessities yet. We're extremely centralized. We have to be because of the encyclopedia. Someday, perhaps, when our population has grown... A strange world. You have no peasantry. Hardin reflected that it didn't require a great deal of acumen to tell that His Eminence was indulging in a bit of fairly clumsy pumping. He replied casually, No, nor nobility. Old Roderick's eyebrows lifted. And your leader, the man I am to meet? You mean Dr. Perrin? Yes, he's the chairman of the Board of Trustees, and the personal representative of the Empire. Doctor? No other title? A scholar? And he rates above the civil authority? Why, certainly, replied Hardin amiably. We're all scholars, more or less. After all, we're not so much a world as a scientific foundation, under the direct control of the Emperor. There was a faint emphasis upon the last phrase that seemed to disconcert the sub-prefect. He remained thoughtfully silent during the rest of the slow way to Cyclopedia Square. If Hardin found himself bored by the afternoon and evening that followed, he had at least the satisfaction of realizing that Perrin and Old Roderick, having met with loud and mutual protestations of esteem and regard, were detesting each other's company a good deal more. Old Roderick had attended with glazed eye to Perrin's lecture during the inspection tour of the Encyclopedia Building. With polite and vacant smile, he had listened to the latter's rapid patter as they passed through the vast storehouses of reference films and the numerous projection rooms. It was only after he had gone down level by level into and through the composing departments, editing departments, publishing departments, and filming departments that he made the first comprehensive statement. This is all very interesting, he said, but it seems a strange occupation for grown men. What good is it? It was a remark Hardin noted for which Perrin found no answer, though the expression of his face was most eloquent. The dinner that evening was much the mirror image of the events of that afternoon, for Old Roderick monopolized the conversation by describing, in minute technical detail and with incredible zest, his own exploits as battalion head during the recent war between Anacreon and the neighboring newly proclaimed kingdom of Smyrna. The details of the sub-prefect's account were not completed until dinner was over, and one by one the minor officials had drifted away. The last bit of triumphant description of mangled spaceships came when he had accompanied Perrin and Hardin onto the balcony and relaxed in the warm air of the summer evening. And now, he said with a heavy joviality, to serious matters. By all means, murmured Hardin, lighting a long cigar of vegan tobacco. Not many left, he reflected, and teetering his chair back on two legs. The galaxy was high in the sky, and its misty lens shape stretched lazily from horizon to horizon. The few stars here at the very edge of the universe were insignificant twinkles in comparison. Of course, said the sub-prefect, all the formal discussions, the paper signing, and such dull technicalities, that is, will take place before the... What is it you call your council?
The Board of Trustees, replied Perrin coldly.
Queer name. Anyway, that's for tomorrow. We might as well clear away some of the underbrush man to man right now, though, eh? And this means, prodded Hardin, just this. There's been a certain change in the situation out here in the periphery, and the status of your planet has become a trifle uncertain. It would be very convenient if we succeeded in coming to an understanding as to how the matter stands. By the way, Mayor, have you another one of those cigars? Hardin started and produced one reluctantly. Anselm Oat Roderick sniffed at it and emitted a clucking sound of pleasure. Vegan tobacco. Where did you get it?
We've received some last shipment. There's hardly any left. Space knows when we'll get more, if ever.
Perrin scowled. He didn't smoke, and for that matter detested the odor.
Let me understand this, Your Eminence. Your mission is merely one of clarification?
Old Roderick nodded through the smoke of his first lusty puffs.
In that case, it is soon over. The situation with respect to Encyclopedia Foundation Number 1 is what it always has been.
Ah, and what is it that it always has been?
Just this. A state-supported scientific institution and part of the personal domain of His August Majesty, the Emperor.
The sub-prefect seemed unimpressed. He blew smoke rings. That's a nice theory, Dr. Perrin. I imagine you've got charters with the Imperial Seal upon it. But what's the actual situation? How do you stand with respect to Smyrna?
You're not 50 parsecs from Smyrna's capital, you know. And what about Konom and Daribo?
Hiren said, We have nothing to do with any prefect. As part of the emperor's...
They're not prefects, reminded old Roderick. They're kingdoms now.
Kingdoms, then. We have nothing to do with them. As a scientific institution...
Science be dashed, swore the other, via a bouncing soldierly oath that ionized the atmosphere. What the devil has that got to do with the fact that we're liable to see Terminus taken over by Smyrna at any time?
And the emperor? He would just sit by?
Old Roderick calmed down and said, Well, now, Dr. Perrin, you respect the emperor's property, and so does Anacreon, but Smyrna might not. Remember, we've just signed a treaty with the emperor. I'll present a copy to that board of yours tomorrow, which places upon us the responsibility of maintaining order within the borders of the old prefect of Anacreon on behalf of the empire. Our duty is clear, then, isn't it?
Certainly. But Terminus is not part of the prefect of Anacreon.
And Smyrna?
Nor is it part of the prefect of Smyrna. It's not part of any prefect.
Does Smyrna know that?
I don't care what it knows.
We do. We've just finished a war with her, and she still holds two stellar systems that are ours. Terminus occupies an extremely strategic spot between the two nations.
Hardin felt weary. He broke in.
What is your proposition, Your Eminence?
The sub-prefect seemed quite ready to stop fencing in favor of more direct statements. He said briskly, It seems perfectly obvious that since Terminus cannot defend itself, Anacreon must take over the job for its own sake. You understand we have no desire to interfere with internal administration.
Uh-huh,
grunted Hardin dryly. But we believe that it would be best for all concerned to have Anacreon establish a military base upon the planet.
And that's all you would want, a military base in some of the vast unoccupied territory, and let it go at that?
Well, of course, there would be the matter of supporting the protecting forces.
Hardin's chair came down on all four, and his elbows went forward on his knees. Now we're getting to the nub. Let's put it into language. Terminus is to be a protectorate and to pay tribute.
Not tribute. Taxes. We're protecting you. You pay for it.
Perrin banged his hand on the chair with sudden violence. Let me speak, Hardin. Your Eminence, I don't care, a rusty half-credit coin for Anacreon, Smyrna, or all your local politics and petty wars. I tell you, this is a state-supported, tax-free institution.
State-supported? But we are the state, Dr. Perrin, and we're not supporting.
Perrin rose angrily. Your Eminence, I am the direct representative of...
His August Majesty the Emperor, chorused Anselm Old Roderick sourly, and I am the direct representative of the King of Anacreon. Anacreon is a lot nearer, Dr. Perrin.
Let's get back to business, urged Hardin. How would you take these so-called taxes, Your Eminence? Would you take them in kind? Wheat, potatoes, vegetables, cattle?
The sub-prefect stared. What the devil? What do we need with those? We've got hefty surpluses. Gold, of course. Chromium or vanadium would be even better, incidentally, if you have in quantity.
Hardin laughed. Quantity? We haven't even got iron in quantity. Gold? Here, take a look at our currency.
He tossed a coin to the envoy. Old Roderick bounced it and stared.
What is it?
Steel?
That's right.
I don't understand.
Terminus is a planet practically without metals. We import it all. Consequently, we have no gold and nothing to pay, unless you want a few thousand bushels of potatoes.
Well, manufactured goods.
Without metal? What do we make our machines out of?
There was a pause, and Perrin tried again. This whole discussion is wide of the point. Terminus is not a planet, but a scientific foundation preparing a great encyclopedia. Spaceman, have you no respect for science?
Encyclopedias don't win war. Old Roderick's brows furrowed. A completely unproductive world, then, and practically unoccupied at that?
Well, you might pay with land.
What do you mean? Asked Perrin.
Well, this world is just about empty, and the unoccupied land is probably fertile. There are many of the nobility on Anacreon that would like an addition to their estates.
You can't propose any such.
There's no necessity of looking so alarmed, Dr. Perrin. There's plenty for all of us. If it comes to what it comes, and you cooperate, we could probably arrange it so that you lose nothing. Titles can be conferred and estates granted. You understand me, I think.
Perrin sneered. Thanks. And then Hardin said ingenuously, Could Anacreon supply us with adequate quantities of plutonium for our atomic power plant? We've only a few years' supply left.
There was a gasp from Perrin, and then a dead silence for minutes.
When Old Roderick spoke, it was in a voice quite different from what it had been till then.
You have atomic power?
Certainly. What's unusual in that? I imagine atomic power is 50,000 years old now. Why shouldn't we have it? except that it's a little difficult to get plutonium.
Yes, yes. The envoy paused and added uncomfortably, Well, gentlemen, we'll pursue the subject tomorrow. You'll excuse me.
Perrin looked after him and gritted through his teeth. That insufferable, dull-witted donkey! That Hardin broke in.
Not at all. He's merely the product of his environment. He doesn't understand much except that I got a gun and you ain't.
Perrin whirled on him in exasperation. What in space did you mean by the talk about military bases and tribute? Are you crazy?
No, I merely gave him rope and let him talk. You'll notice that he managed to stumble out with Anacreon's real intentions, that is, the parceling up of Terminus into landed estates. Of course, I don't intend to let that happen.
You don't intend? You don't? And who are you? And may I ask what you meant by blowing off your mouth about our atomic power plant? Why, it's just the thing that would make us a military target.
Yes, grinned Hardin. A military target to stay away from. Isn't it obvious why I brought the subject up? It happened to confirm a very strong suspicion I had had.
And that was what?
Anacreon no longer has an atomic power economy. If they had, our friend would undoubtedly have realized that plutonium, except in ancient tradition, is not used in power plants. Therefore, it follows that the rest of the periphery no longer has atomic power either. Certainly Smyrna hasn't, or Anacreon wouldn't have won most of the battles in their recent war. Interesting, wouldn't you say?
Bah!
Perrin left in fiendish humor, and Hardin smiled gently. He threw his cigar away and looked up at the outstretched galaxy.
Back to oil and coal, are they? He murmured.
And what the rest of his thoughts were, he kept to himself.
3. When Hardin denied owning the journal, he was perhaps technically correct, but no more. Hardin had been the leading spirit in the drive to incorporate Terminus into an autonomous municipality. He had been elected its first mayor. So it was not surprising that, though not a single share of journal stock was in his name, some 60% was controlled by him in more devious fashions. There were ways. Consequently, when Hardin began suggesting to Perrin that he be allowed to attend meetings of the Board of Trustees, it was not quite coincidence that the journal began a similar campaign. And the first mass meeting in the history of the Foundation was held, demanding representation of the city in the national government. And eventually, Perrin capitulated with ill grace. Hardin, as he sat at the foot of the table, speculated idly as to just what it was that made physical scientists such poor administrators. It might be merely that they were too used to inflexible fact and far too unused to pliable people. In any case, there was Tomas Sutton, Jord Farah on his left, London Crast and Yate Fulham on his right, with Perrin himself presiding. He knew them all, of course, but they seemed to have put on an extra special bit of pomposity for the occasion. Hardin half-dozed through the initial formalities, and then perked up when Perrin sipped at the glass of water before him by way of preparation and said, I find it very gratifying to be able to inform the board that since our last meeting I have received word that Lord Dorwin, Chancellor of the Empire, will arrive at Terminus in 2 weeks. It may be taken for granted that our relations with Anacreon will be smoothed out to our complete satisfaction as soon as the Emperor is informed of the situation.
He smiled and addressed Hardin across the length of the table.
Information to this effect has been given the journal.
Hardin snickered below his breath. It seemed evident that Perrin's desire to strut this information before him had been one reason for his admission into the sacrosanctum. He said evenly, Leaving vague expressions out of account, what do you expect Lord Dorwin to do?
Tomas Sutt replied, He had a bad habit of addressing one in the third person when in his more stately moods.
It is quite evident, he observed, that Mayor Hardin is a professional cynic. He can scarcely fail to realize that the Emperor would be most unlikely to allow his personal rights to be infringed.
Why? What would he do in case they were?
There was an annoyed stir. Perrin said, You are out of order, and as an afterthought, and are making what are near treasonable statements besides.
Am I to consider myself answered?
Yes, if you have nothing further to say.
Don't jump to conclusions. I'd like to ask a question. Besides this stroke of diplomacy, which may or may not prove to mean anything, has anything concrete been done to meet the Anacreonic menace? Yate Fulham drew one hand along his ferocious red mustache. You see a menace there, do you?
Don't you?
Scarcely. This with indulgence. The Emperor...
Great space!
Hardin felt annoyed. What is this? Every once in a while, someone mentions Emperor or Empire as if it were a magic word. The Emperor is 50,000 parsecs away, and I doubt whether he gives a damn about us. And if he does, what can he do? What there was of the Imperial Navy in these regions is in the hands of the Four Kingdoms now, and Anacreon has its share. Listen, we have to fight with guns, not with words. Now get this. We've had 2 months' grace so far, mainly because we've given Anacreon the idea that we've got atomic weapons. Well, we all know that that's a little white lie. We've got atomic power, but only for commercial uses, and darn little at that. They're going to find that out soon, and if you think they're going to enjoy being jollied along, you're mistaken. My dear sir, hold on. I'm not finished. Hardin was warming up. He liked this. It's all very well to drag chancellors into this, but it would be much nicer to drag a few great big siege guns fitted for beautiful atomic bombs into it. We've lost 2 months, gentlemen, and we may not have another 2 months to lose. What do you propose to do?
Said London Crest, his long nose wrinkling angrily. If you're proposing the militarization of the Foundation, I won't hear a word of it. It would mark our open entrance into the field of politics. We, Mr. Mayor, are a scientific foundation and nothing else, added Sut.
He does not realize, moreover, that building armaments would mean withdrawing men, valuable men, from the Encyclopedia. That cannot be done, come what may.
Very true, agreed Perrin. The Encyclopedia first, always.
Hardin groaned in spirit. The board seemed to suffer violently from Encyclopedia on the brain. He said icily, has it ever occurred to this board that it is barely possible the Terminus may have interests other than the Encyclopedia?
Perrin replied, I do not conceive, Hardin, that the Foundation can have any interest other than the Encyclopedia. I didn't say the Foundation, I said Terminus. I'm afraid you don't understand the situation. There's a good million of us here on Terminus, and not more than 150,000 are working directly on the Encyclopedia. To the rest of us, this is home. We were born here. We're living here. Compared with our farms and our homes and our factories, the Encyclopedia means little to us. We want them protected.
He was shouted down. Encyclopedia first, ground out Crast. We have a mission to fulfill.
Mission hell, shouted Hardin. That might have been true 50 years ago, but this is a new generation.
That has nothing to do with it, replied Perrin. We are scientists.
And Hardin leaped through the opening.
Are you, though? That's a nice hallucination, isn't it? Your bunch here is a perfect example of what's been wrong with the entire galaxy for thousands of years. What kind of science is it to be stuck out here for centuries classifying the work of scientists of the last millennium? Have you ever thought of working onward, extending their knowledge and improving upon it? No, you're quite happy to stagnate. The whole galaxy is and has been for space knows how long. That's why the periphery is revolting. That's why communications are breaking down. That's why petty wars are becoming eternal. That's why whole systems are losing atomic power and going back to barbarous techniques of chemical power. If you ask me, he cried, the galaxy is going to pot.
He paused and dropped into his chair to catch his breath, paying no attention to the two or three that were attempting simultaneously to answer him. Crest got the floor.
I don't know what you're trying to gain by your hysterical statements, Mr. Mayor. Certainly you're adding nothing constructive to the discussion. I move, Mr. Chairman, that the Speaker's remarks be placed out of order and the discussion be resumed from the point where it was interrupted.
Jord Farah bestirred himself for the first time. Up to this point, Farah had taken no part in the argument, even at its hottest. But now, his ponderous voice, every bit as ponderous as his 300-pound body, burst its base way out.
Haven't we forgotten something, gentlemen?
What? Asked Perrin peevishly.
That in a month we celebrate our 50th anniversary.
Farah had a trick of uttering the most obvious platitudes with great profundity.
What of it?
And on that anniversary, continued Farah placidly, Harry Seldon's vault will open. Have you ever considered what might be in the vault?
I don't know. Routine matters. A stock speech of congratulations, perhaps. I don't think any significance need be placed in the vault. Though the journal, and he glared at Hardin, who grinned back, did try to make an issue of it. I put a stop to that.
This book is continued at this point on the other side of this cassette.